And I'll just add on to that because in the same line, when you asked that question, I was thinking of Daniel and his friends. When they were carried to Babylon, it was attempted to make them in every way Babylonian, teach them the learning, the language of the of their new country, change their names, give them new names. In fact, we even only really know the new names of Daniel's friends, right? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those are their new names. But even though they were treated as if, or tried to be made into Babylonians, they never forgot their identity. Because when Nebuchadnezzar said, "Here's my image that you're going to bow down to, this idol that I've or this image that I've constructed. When you hear the music, bow down," so on and so on. We know probably the story there. They didn't. And they must have been obvious when they stood out. It doesn't say that anybody else even stood out the way that they did. Maybe they were the only three out of millions. So they'd be very obvious. But it's because they had the sense of dignity, as I think we've been saying, of who they were. We are representing Jehovah, and we believe in his rights to be honored above these graven images. We've been taught, the Word of God says, don't bow down to carved images. We're not going to do that. We're going to honor God because he deserves honor. We're going to live in the dignity of the as representatives of Jehovah on the earth. And I think these phrases are that dignity, that God has chosen us. God has elected us. He's called us. It's like if you walk around, you know, some people, they walk to the White House in Washington, D.C., and they take pictures outside the fence. Somebody else maybe gets an invitation. They just walk right up. What boldness? No, it's not boldness. It's because they have an invitation. They can hold on to this specific call, the specific invitation. They have the dignity and the authority to walk differently, walk to a different place than everybody else goes to. And when we get to, I think we should move on to that, maybe verses 11 and on, that there is this battle. Sam mentioned the phrase earlier. There's a battle to make us into Babylonians, if you'd continue the metaphor here. There's a battle to make us like everybody else. It's these fleshly lusts. And the problem is, there's something in us that's just waiting for the invitation. We love to respond to that. Our old self loves to respond to these fleshly lusts, and they war against the soul. It's a very dramatic description of this battle. They war against the soul. It's not even just against us, but it's warring against the soul, warring against our personhood, warring against what makes us us, these fleshly lusts. And so there's an exhortation, abstain from these. And so that's the don't do verse. And then verse 12 is the do verse, honorable conduct. Paul said, I think it was in Acts 24, "I exercise myself to always have a conscience void of offense before God and man." Mm-hmm. It was in front of one of the Roman rulers that he said that. It's my goal to be that I cannot be characterized as having any lack of integrity, not just as far as God is concerned, but even in front of people. Daniel, when the people who hated him wanted to find an excuse against him, the only thing they could do was invent a new law. Mm-hmm. They couldn't find a single thing in his behavior. So this comes out of our character. When we are living in the dignity of God's identification, "I'm putting a new name tag on you," God says. "You are strangers. You're not living in an ordinary place as if you're home. You're going to live differently." So how does that work? You're not going to participate in all these fleshly lusts like everybody else does. And you're going to behave with integrity like everybody else doesn't do. So these are some ways that we see the reality of that. The power for it is not that we just, gender up some willpower and we're going to try to live a life of integrity. It comes from the identity of God's call upon us. And therefore, we honor God, and we don't want to dishonor his name, and so we live as strangers. I'm sure there's more we can keep on going in this passage.
Yep. Just briefly, this digression in relation to Daniel, which is very interesting, because he was really a stranger where they were in Babylon. And we see how he watched that he would not live according to the customs in Babylon, but that he would live according to the thoughts of God revealed in his word. We mentioned the thought of identity. And of course, our identity is related to our names we have. Right? This is Steve. That is his name. And we can identify him as Steve Campbell because that is his name. Now, you see, King Nebuchadnezzar, he could change the name of Daniel and his friends. And he did so. And he wanted to go further. He really wanted to change their identity. And how do you do that? You see, that is a matter of food then. What is the food you take in? In German, we have a saying. Lars, how do we translate this? Man isst, was man isst.
You are what you eat.
Exactly.
You have that in English.
You have it too, huh? It doesn't.
But it doesn't sound as good as yours.
Yes. It comes from a godless philosopher, unfortunately, but it's very true. You are what you eat. And you see, it's interesting in Daniel chapter 1 that the matter of food is mentioned together with a name change. And there, this decision came in of Daniel and his friends. So far we go. We can't do anything. If he changes our names, we have to bow to it. But we don't change identity. And we take the food which God has in mind for us. And that is exactly our subject here in 1 Peter 2. Fleshly lusts are there. But what is the food we take that the inner man is nourished and we really live according to our identity?
The thought I was going to share was the fact that at this age group, there is really the attack is particularly towards the flesh. If you look at 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22, it says, flee also youthful lusts, but pursue righteousness, faith, love, peace with those who call on the Lord out of a pure heart. I mean, we are attacked with this at every stage of life. It isn't just when you're young. But we know, you know, the attacks seem to be, what should I say, more aggressive when you are young. And the scriptures are telling us, flee also youthful lust. And that's a challenge for all of us, but particularly for when people are pretty young.
You know, one thing I was going to add to that too, I read somewhere, I don't remember where I read it exactly, but it's kind of in line with that, where, you know, for a Christian, it's one thing to, like, say you don't do things. You know, like, you know, you're like, you know, oh yeah, I don't smoke, or I don't whatever it is. But, like, to focus on doing good things instead of, I think it makes it easier, you know, idle hands, you know, or devil's workshop type of thing, you know. So I know it's in there already, but, you know, that's always helped me and figured.
I was thinking of, just on that line, I was thinking of the gospel that Steve had the other night, the things that Jesus both began to do and to teach. And then it says in the book of Acts in chapter 10, I think it is, that he went about doing every manner of good. So it's the things that he did. And as a stranger, as the, we can say, perfect stranger in this scene, he went about doing good. Doing.
The thought I had, going back to that verse in Peter, the New King James says, beloved, I beg you. As a sojourner, I beg you. And then the Darby uses exhort. So he's really pleading with you. Abstain from fleshy lusts. Because it can really do damage. It really can do real harm. So he's begging. He's like, beg you, please don't do this.